The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
We do have joining us here in studio this morning, former police commissioner, political leader of the NT. Let's welcome back to our program, Gary Griffith. Good morning to you.
Hi, good morning. Always a pleasure to be here.
Nice to have you with us here this morning. And boy, oh boy, do we have a lot to discuss. The conversations have been dominated with the country's crime situation, and for the obvious reason. This speaks to everyone's personal safety, security, how they feel. It impacts on so many other things in our lives, how we go about our business in general, and all these other things. A release issued by our Prime Minister has, should I say, inflamed the matter rather than deal with some of the concerns that people have. Let's start our discussion there with what the Prime Minister had to say about the crime situation, him being concerned, and your views on his position. As I've been saying, he's not just the Prime Minister, he's head of the National Security Council. So if there's anybody who could get the job done, who should be getting the job done, it should be him. What's your take on what the Prime Minister had to say?
Yeah, it is rather disappointing, hypocritical, and comical all at the same time. It was all packaged. The reason I say hypocritical, firstly, it's because that is exactly what was being done previously, because he stated that he thinks that the police should make the criminals uncomfortable. That is exactly what we were doing. But the rogue elements in the police service and those who may be affiliated to criminal elements, they had an issue with what I was doing. So when you would have recalled the one shot, one kill, we'll do it to them before they do it to us. Referring to somebody who has murdered someone, raped a child, kidnapped someone as a cockroach, people were offended by that, because there are many people out there who defend criminals. They benefit from it when they bring funds and so forth to their home and they turn a blind eye. So there's good versus evil in this country. But when we were doing just that, we were pegging back the criminals. We put fear in them. No area, no block, no community, no neighborhood belonged to any criminal. I actually led operations. You'd have seen in sea lots and everywhere. Everywhere that the officers will go, I will be there leading from the front. But so Keith Rowley did not want that. You made the decision, and now you're upset about the criminals not being uncomfortable. But you made that decision. You have to accept responsibility for it. And I think what is also very important is for the country to understand, many times, you know, persons who are blind supporters of political parties and politicians, they try to find excuses for them. So they will say, well, it is not the responsibility of the Prime Minister. It is. It is. The Chair of the National Security Council, the Minister of National Security, the Attorney General, those three are the main persons who comprise the National Security Council. That is a critical element that decides policy direction. In the People's Partnership Administration, with Kamala Prasad Bisesa, Anand Ranrogan, and myself, it was not a Gary Griffith thing per se, but because of that type of working together, we were able to put up proper policies that saw the highest reduction in serious crime in 31 years. So that is the importance of politicians understanding their role and function in policy direction. Just saying that is the police to be blamed and the police need more resources and the police are the ones supposed to do the job. No. If you get a very successful, powerful national security minister and or prime minister who's chair of the National Security Council, you will see the difference. And you saw it in 2013 to 2015, as I said, highest reduction in serious crime in 31 years. Stephen Williams was the commissioner. We were just telling him what to do. When that changed and Eddie Dillon took over, crime started to escalate because the National Security Council did not have the capability or the capacity to be able to direct the steam Stephen Williams in policy directions.
We've spoken numerous times on this over the years and everything else. We've been talking about it for a long period of time. Here's something I probably need to understand, because I don't. When we have changes in administration, the police officers don't change. The senior officers don't change, and all, they remain. But the crime fighting changes.
Yes.
How? Because, okay. And I know you're going to explain it to me. I know you've explained it before, but I just wanted to reemphasize this. The same police officers who would be going after criminals and fighting the gangs and the guns and this and that and the next, when there is a change in administration, what about the approach that is different that would see something that working today either not be there or not be working tomorrow, because the same police officers, they're not doing the same job.
Yeah, correct. And it is all based on political pettiness. It is not coincidental. I mean, many people try not to politicize crime. 1991 to 1995, crime went up every year. 1995 to 2000, it went down every year. 2001 to 2010, it went up every year. 2010 to 2015, it went down every year. 2015 to 2024, it went up every year, except for when I was commissioner. And the reason I say that, that has to do with the change in government. PNM was in government in 91 to 95, and 2001 to 2010, and 2015 to 2024. Every time that they're in government, crime goes up.
Okay, but is that evidence of incompetence? Or is that evidence of something more sinister as intentional?
A combination of both. It is based on incompetence because you start with the PNM's concept started with Patrick Manning saying it, that all that is required to run national security is common sense and a level head. That is stupidity at the highest level. Mm. So you bring in a nightclub owner in Howard Shinley. You bring in Martin Joseph, who will always speak about the arrests and a decrease in the increase in crime.
Mm-hmm.
That sums up the quality and the caliber of the ministers that you had under the PNM. Well, let's not go now with Fitzgerald Hines, who is undoubtedly seen by every citizen as the worst minister in the history of Trinidad and Tobago. Compare that to the UNC People's Partnership, NAR, when you had persons such as, I think, the best minister of national security the country ever had. No, not myself. Brigadier General Joseph Theodore, mm-hmm. when you were less than 100 murders. And he did that in a period where he didn't have the technology and so forth that I had the luxury of having as a security minister. And then you had people such as Brigadier John Sandy, Brigadier Carl Alfonso. So the non-PNM government has always seen it fit to look for quality persons to deal with being Minister of National Security. You bring somebody who was a retired police constable, as Fitzgerald Hines. The man didn't have a clue. The man actually is the first Minister of National Security who said it is not his role and function to secure the country. And it shows that is the first line. And by doing that, the second aspect has to do with political pettiness. Every time governments change, you shut down and dismantle everything that was done by the previous administration out of pettiness, out of corruption. So, for example, the Darman vessels. I acquired 12 Darman vessels at $1.2 billion to do the exact thing that the three OPVs would have done for $2.4 billion. And when the government changed, Eddie Dillon and company left those Darman vessels more than Stobles Bay for the last 9 years, refused to use them. And then they go to Australia to purchase more vessels to do exactly what the Darman vessels could do. And not one taxpayer has protested about it. So you have the 12 vessels parked up there doing nothing, but you go to Australia to buy more vessels. That is where the corruption comes in, because I need to get something before I leave office. And therein lies the problem. And for example, and even myself as commissioner, it was political.
Mm.
So when I left as commissioner, the things that I would have done that caused the highest public trust and confidence in the police service in history at 59%, why crime was number 4 behind health, education, and the economy. As soon as I left, out of bad mind, you shut down SWAT, which was putting fear in the criminals. You replace it with something known as the National Operation Task Force. And the last 3 years, their most successful operation was to arrest an old lady for selling school books on the pavement. Compare that to SWAT. SWAT put an end to kidnapping, an end to home invasion, an end to extortion, pegging back criminals and putting fear in the criminals. You remove SWAT, the Emergency Response Patrol, the National Operations Center, the E999 being effective, GPS tracking on all police vehicles, 5-minute response, the Commissioner's Command Center, body cameras, tasers, pepper spray, social media monitoring unit, gender-based violence unit, every single thing you shut down and dismantle. And so from us having the number of murders under my last year being 342, it has almost doubled just 3 years later. So it shows that it can be changed, but because of politics, incompetence, and deliberate intention out of bad mind, the citizens have paid the price.
But why would... Okay, no. This calls for a lot of speculation, because you can't be in the mind of the Prime Minister or the Minister of National Security, because we've been told on so many occasions that the buck stops with the Prime Minister and all ministers carry out the mandate of the government, which the Prime Minister spearheads. So should we really hold Fitzgerald Hines that accountable, or is he just a messenger boy in the entire thing? Where should... Because I find that as a nation, we are not seeking to determine who we should hold accountable for how bad things are. And somehow or the other, the discussion has been skewed to ascribe blame to everyone in portions, as opposed to say, well, here now, you're not the man who's supposed to be dealing with this thing. So, do we really hold the Prime Minister accountable? Do we hold the government, the cabinet? Whose head should be on the chopping block? 600 and something murders and counting, a crime situation where if you ask anyone if they feel safe, I'm sure they'll tell you no. Where should that blame lie?
The buck stops at the top. At the top, the Prime Minister. He's the chair of the National Security Council. He refers to himself in that capacity more than the Prime Minister. Notice that. So mm-hmm. He sees the importance of that because you are now in charge of national security, law enforcement, police, customs, Coast Guard, immigration, army. So it gives him a sense of power. But with power comes responsibility to get the job done. And you are the one that would have been responsible for imposing Fitzgerald Hines on us. You are the one who selected Earl Christopher. You are the one who selected McDonald Jacob. And because of your decision, these incompetent individuals shut down all the things I just spoke about. This was the reason why, just 4 years ago, citizens felt safe. As I said, crime was the number four concern behind health, education, and the economy. And let us not go down the road of that very foolish comment made by Kamala Prasad-Bisesa as an excuse to say that crime went down because of COVID. And Keith Rowley himself. These two characters have the audacity to lie to the country. Because information in January and February in 2020, before COVID, crime started going down drastically. We cracked it. It took me 18 months to transform everything based on the mess that Eddie Dillon and Stephen Williams had put in. And with that, that's why we had the safest carnival ever. After I left in August 2021, when there was still COVID, still state of emergency, still public health regulations, October and November had the first and the third highest number of murders in the history of the country. So is it that the criminals COVID was not a concern? Additionally, in Jamaica, Guyana, and almost every city in the United States, Boston, Detroit, LA, Chicago, New York, crime was at its highest during the COVID period. Because you had situations where businesses were closing down, people were being frustrated, domestic violence at homes, inflation, cost of living, unemployment, all byproducts for crime going up.
Mm-hmm.
After COVID, crime went down. So I guess in the gospel, according to Kamala and Keith Rowley, those criminals misled their memo that COVID was the reason. It wasn't because of COVID. In fact, COVID saw many police units around the world being criticized and attacked because of abuse of authority, persons abandoning their posts. Not one incident took place like that because the police were well motivated, there was high morale, and the public trust, they had utmost trust in the police officers. These are the same police officers, so don't knock them. These are the same 7,000 that the public loved, believed in, had a good a good feeling about. Remember a few moments later how police officers were treating citizens in the road and so forth, because I put systems to measure their performance and make them accountable. But Keith Rowley removed me. Keith Rowley selected Earl Christopher. Keith Rowley selected Fitzgerald Hines. So Keith Rowley must be ultimately responsible for the situation we are in.
I'll tell you this. Looking back at your term as police commissioner and sort and the manner in which things were done, it was a manner in which we were not accustomed to as a country. Prior to that, we did not see that kind of hands-on approach by a police commissioner leading some of these. I mean, you would be there. I remember clearly some officers from SWAT trying to climb over a gate somewhere in Westmoreland or some kind of thing like that for some operation. And there was a growing level of confidence in the police service. I mean, it was a joke, it was a meme. Something wrong, you pick up the phone, you call Gary, and yeah, Gary will fix it and that kind of thing. That showed that, you know, the public was very much aware of your style and your stewardship of the police at that point in time. Water under the bridge, it happened that you were not there anymore, and we've seen what has transpired since. Now, what was there and what was implemented and how things were working and it being removed, all of those things and the crime situation, many people are not willing in the discussion to admit what you're saying.
Yeah.
For the obvious reason, because if they admit what, well, here now, what the man's saying is true, you would cast some real aspersions on the people who dismantled some of what was there.
Correct.
And we've gone into great detail. You've explained to us the three pillars that you had worked on and why things were working. You were working with the Attorney General, who's Faris Al-Rawi, and people couldn't believe that when they hear it and all that kind of thing. But it was working. Now we are facing a situation where we don't know who to turn to. Because the people who we think we should turn to are telling us in no uncertain terms, hey, don't watch me, no. It's not my thing. You understand? It's somebody else's fault and all that. For those of you who may have joined the conversation midway, we are speaking former police commissioner, NTA political leader, Gary Griffin. Let's take a couple of your calls. Yeah. It's 29 minutes before 8. Let's see who we have with us here this morning. Hello, good morning.
Good morning, once more, Satish. President, good morning, former commissioner Gary Griffiths, one of my mentors, I must say. Mr. Griffiths, how do you view the opposition leaders helping in the fight against crime? Do you see there is need for more legislation, or do you see conversations with the Prime Minister or otherwise? And my second point, please don't get me wrong, but we have a situation in this country where whenever we have several parties contesting a general election, we always see it favoring the PNM because of what we call a split vote. How do you see your party in this upcoming election contesting? Do you feel you can win the election? Do you feel your intervention will support the UNC or the PNM? I thank you. Enjoy.
Yeah, sure. Okay. Before that, I was going to mention, to show the desperation of trying to big up the present commissioner of police. Look at the headline in a newspaper. You have Fitzgerald Hines and Keith Scotland praising Ulla Christopher for being concerned about water guns. So she's being commended on our front page for saying, I have a concern about water guns. But the horse was already bolted. There are tens of thousands of those gel blasters all over the country that was approved by dozens of customs officers, and other customs officers may have rejected it for other suppliers. But it's all over the country. So she should have known that from day one. You wait until tens of thousands in the country to now say, I have a concern, and you're getting commended by ministers. Going to the question of the caller, the opposition leader was very clear when she offered her services to the present government to say, look, we cracked it when we were in government. People felt safer. People seeing a reduction in crime. There were things that were being done. Maybe let us talk to try to see if we can find an avenue to assist you all to reduce crime. That is all the opposition leader can do. To believe that the opposition leader's role and function is solely to approve every single piece of legislation that comes to the table by the government, that is incorrect. So it is hoped that the government will understand that. The government flatly refused my support and assistance, being a previous national security advisor, security minister, and commissioner of police. And it basically said, look, I'd rather the country drunk in blood than to be willing to take any advice from somebody that doesn't have my party card. That is what has caused the problem in this country. This country is divided, not just by good versus evil, but party cards in the back pocket. So the role of the opposition leader is to keep the government in check, to support the government on good legislation as it pertains to national security, and also to be able to provide support, guidance, and advice if the government is unable to do their job, which is what is being done at this time. As it pertains to the other avenue, I keep hearing this split vote. I never understood what a split vote is. You can't cut a vote in two. I do understand, however, that when the UNC in 36 years have never won any election on their own in a three-horse race. In 36 years, they have never won. The only time that they have won is when they joined previously ULF with the ONR. Then in 1995, joining with A&R Robinson to get it to, that was the 17-17-2. And then in 2010 with the COP. So the only time that the UNC have ever won on their own in a they joined with other parties. The only time it happened when they stood on their own was in 2000 with Basdeo Pandey. But what he did then, he embraced that type of COP type voters. When that's what you would have seen, the Carlos Johns, the Yet Ming, the Moving Assams, the Lindsay Gillett. So it gave the impression that they were that ONR, NAR type persons in the UNC. That is not the case now. So yes, it is a fact. I know people in the UNC do not want to hear it, but the best way to be successful is to face reality, so you know how to achieve your objective. If it is that you know you cannot win alone, trying to attack and discredit and demonize third parties, it's not the way. You're bullying me, attacking me, spitting on me, and then saying, but come in my house and work with me. That is political domestic violence. You can't be calling us pop-up parties, attacking us, and then the next day you do a press, you do a video footage and a photo up with the same political parties you referred to as being irrelevant and pop-up parties. So I do hope that there's going to be some degree of mutual respect. I have formed this political party as a representation of that bridge constituency. That started in 1981 with the ONR with 91,000 votes. It moved to 1991 to the NAR with Kamala Prasad Bisesa being part of the NAR against the UNC with 127,000 votes. It then moved to the COP in 2007 with 148,000 votes. So 17 years later, there are persons between the age of 18 and 35 that never had that third option. And these are people who are not PNM or UNC till they die, are born a PNM and I'll die a PNM and vice versa with UNC. And there's nothing wrong with that. 200,000 people on both sides will see a political leader probably shoot someone in cold blood downtown and they will still vote. They will find an excuse to justify it. It happens with the Republicans and Democrats. That's fine. That's your right. But there are 150,000 odd persons that analyze. They look at policies. They look at the people. They look at whether you have the political will. They look at corruption. They look at performance, and that is how they are going to decide. That is where the NTA comes in. The NTA is more than willing to work with and form strategic alliances. That's why we are known as the National Transformation Alliance. But you can't attack us, discredit us, call a political leader a failure, call us pop-up parties, and then say, well, what you bring to the table. You're trying to have to work with us and then demand, let's see your track record, let's see your CV, let's see how many people you have in your party. I mean, that's being rude, because that's just like me saying, all right, for UNC to work with the NTA, I want a confirmation that there would not be a live sport. I want a confirmation that nobody was going to give a gang leader a contract to build a police station. If I make comments like that and give you demands like that, you wouldn't take it, because we're trying to get into a marriage, but you're trying to basically say, I want to see whether you are worthy to be in be in my room. It doesn't work that way. You're fully aware that that bridge constituency is the critical element that will get you to win the marginal seats. The diehard UNC supporters, who I have the world of respect for, I was in the UNC executive, in fact, defeating the Basdeo Pandey slate, only myself, Sadiq and Manohar, won our seat in that NATEX in 2006, I think, when I was on the Dukaran slate. And I can tell you that the unfortunate thing is they cannot vote twice. So by preaching the same thing, where the UNC base is, they are not going to win a seat in the marginals without the support of that third party. And what makes it worse is if that third party goes on their own, you then start being a possibility of losing Sama Barataria, Chaguanas East, Pointer Pier, and Maruga. And that's how you get the 26-15, similar to what took place in 2007. So you work and you respect us, you could get a repeat of 2010. You disrespect us, trivialize us, and ignore us, you could get a repeat of 2007.
Well, from all of what is in the public domain, it seems less and less likely that any kind of accommodation is going to be possible. Don't get me wrong, once the election bell is rung, all kind of thing could happen. Because we know that in politics, and yesterday was yesterday, and today is today, moving forward. So, you know, still holding out. But some of the things that are being said, some of the actions that are being taken, the NTA, you're moving full speed ahead with your candidates.
You're correct.
And that signals to me that come hell or high water, the NTA is going to contest this thing as it sees fit, with an accommodation, without a com, and you are preparing for that. The more you prepare, is the less likely of an accommodation. Because let's just take some of these key seats, St. Joseph, and this one, and that one, and the next one. I don't think you're going to get a situation where the UNC is going to relinquish and say, well, all right, no problem. You've already announced your candidates. We'll give way to you. And because of that strong tactic, it's less and less likely. One of the things that I find so interesting is whenever there is any other force on the political landscape, the party that gets antsy is the UNC. Not the PNM. The PNM has said, listen, come hell or high water, we go in alone.
Yeah.
Win, lose, draw, whatever. But the UNC forever gives the impression, or its supporters, and even the hierarchy too, they give the impression that anybody else on the landscape weakens the UNC's chances of winning. And I find that to be an indictment against a party that has been around for 30-something years. It suggests that your support is fleeting and not necessarily as strong as it should be. Because anybody should come on the scene, your supporters are supposed to say, well, be in business. UNC, Minke, who come well,
on? You know, I never know what the future holds, but if I was a political leader of a party like the UNC, the things that I would have done for that party that I am not seen by the last two leaders. I saw it with Kamala Prasad Bisesa for a short period in 2010. If I am the political leader of a party like the UNC, my job is to unite those parties so much to let them know, not come under the umbrella and we will just treat you like dogs and we will ignore you and disrespect you and not have you have an input in the running of the government. My type of leadership has always been that. I hate yes people around me. Almost every single person in the UNC will be coming to me, Gary, we have to work together, we have to. But it's just one person that has refused. Only one. And I mean, even going back to the situation where Kamala Prasad Bisesa stated, I don't want to work with the NTA because of what Gary said about Jolene. That is madness at the highest level. So because of what I said about Jolene, you are going to put your 250,000 supporters back in opposition because of what Gary said about Jolene. And let's listen to what I said about Jolene. On three occasions, I made that comment only in response to her calling me a failure, saying that we are pop-up parties, saying what we bring to the table, saying that we are useless. And my response was on three occasions, this is all based on Jolene John insisting that the UNC goes alone. And if that happens, it enhances the chance of the PNM winning. That is my biggest sin. And by me stating that, you have now agreed by having your photo up bringing in other parties. So you're upset with me. And I want every UNC supporter to understand that. She has stated she doesn't want to work with the NTA because of my comments about Jolene John, which is that Jolene is insisting UNC goes alone, which is wrong. And Kamala Prasad Bisesa has now agreed with what I said because she is looking to form alliances with other parties. So you don't want to work with me because I spoke the truth. Unbelievable. And so we have to try to understand that I am there explaining what the truth is and you're upset. But it's okay to call people failures, call them pop-up parties, say the nastiest things about us. Bring in someone who is probably seen as the most disgusting, despicable politician this country has ever seen. A lady is burnt in a fire and you're saying, let all of them burn. Another female is crying and you are mocking her and saying she's a B-word. And you have that around you. And I could assure to the UNC supporters, as much as I love you, there's not one floating voter that will ever vote for a UNC alliance with somebody like that around you. Because they don't want that type of politics. The reason they're trying to remove the PNM is that type of hatred and bitterness. And you bring somebody that is so despicable that every comment he makes is to attack, to destroy. My style, had I been UNC leader, is to bring in people that will unite, build. My intention is to build Trinidad and Tobago and unite it. This country has been divided by politics. And to bring something like that, you know, when you play with filthy animals, you will get fleas.
You know, we've had so many discussions on the program about the UNC and working together with other people, and callers have been making all kinds of demands, for want of a different term. They're saying that, well, the UNC, this one need to work with the UNC, that one need. When they say that, and you drill down and ask them, well, exactly who you think need to work with the UNC, two names come up all the time, Gary Griffith and Makila Pandey. But those are the two people who are excluded from all the discussions about working together. And I mean, if you open the phone lines now, and we will take a couple calls again, and we ask, well, if you think that the UNC should work with anybody, who should they work with? Those are the names that come up. I mean, we've had Makila Pandey in the studio here, and she has said that she tried everything that she could have, shot a jump into a camera window to get, you know, but it's not there. So when the announcement was made about these discussions and you saw the individuals, you had to ask yourself the question whether this was superficial or whether it was genuine. Because the calls for unity, as I said, are being made by people who are UNC supporters but want the UNC to work with the two, Gary Griffith and Makila Pandey, and they are nowhere around. Let's take another call. Hello, good morning. Okay, try us back. 625-2257. And of course, your WhatsApp messages, keep sending those to 306-1065. Let's try this again. Hello, good morning.
And good morning to Mr. Griffith.
Good morning, sir.
Mr. Griffith, during your tenure as Commissioner of Police, a situation occurred that caused consternation in the United States Department of State. So much so that the head diplomat in Trinidad was instructed to make a personal visit to government officials to lay their side in relation to that matter. That matter what made it very clear that had your office continued with yourself there, this country could have faced sanctions. So that when I hear now that it is the PNM and Rowley who didn't want you there and that is why you're not there, I have a different version to the story.
Okay, can you show that document?
And can you
show that document, please? Because I mean, you could easily say aliens came down to Trinidad and demanded that. Do you have documentation Griffith, to show that?
Mr. Griffith, you probably think that this radio station is not listened to by persons of higher status.
I just asked a simple question to you. Right, can you show the documentation to verify your claim?
Listen.
So the answer is no.
The claim is not mine. The claim is that of the Minister of External Affairs, Mr. Amy Brown.
The Amy Brown did not say that. He was speaking. You're lying about what he said. He was speaking about the special operation response team that was shut down because of the concerns of extrajudicial killing. And then if we notice, the special operation response team, not one police officer in SWAT has ever been arrested for any such action. Whilst at the same time, the GB, the IATF, and MOPS and several other units, task force, have dozens of officers that have been charged and investigated for such an offense. So you're telling me that the U.S. would have a concern about SWAT when not one officer has ever been charged for any such offense, but several other units have officers charged and they're getting funding from the U.S.?
What you are saying at this point in time is like Pontius Pilate, you are washing your hands of it and it does not implicate Gary Griffith.
But there was nobody charged. How could you implicate?
The U.S. Department of State have no problem with you.
Seeing the fact that I travel to the United States on a regular basis, I have meetings.
There was a warranty.
And this is the thing. You notice his comment. It is a claim. It is alleged. This is just like the firearm lies. 500,000 police officers used for 70 police officers for 3 years on a fishing expedition. And there was nothing to be found. After 3 years, not all of these audits, it was all a lie. Mm. But that is what the PNM is good at. So you write something to the U.S. and voice your concern of extrajudicial killing. But under the Special Operation Response Team that was the front line, not one police officer in SWAT has ever been arrested. However, under the Special Naval Unit of officers who guard Darrell Daniel, two of them were charged for murder using weapons that the U.S. funded. And the SNU still get funding from the U.S., the other units where dozens of officers have been charged for murder and abuse of authority have been charged and they still get funding from the U.S. So SWAT that never had one officer charged, that becomes a concern. This is where I speak about there were criminal elements within the police service and in the politicians who realized what Gary Griffith was doing was affecting their criminal enterprise. So they tried their best. So when Amy Brown made that statement, up to this day, I asked Amy Brown, please show any SWAT officer that has ever been arrested for extrajudicial killing. Not one. Not one has been charged. But we have dozens charged from several other units that get U.S. funding. So it showed that what they tried was a deliberate lie. They funded, they pumped the information to the U.S. And the U.S. it got back to me where they realized that there was a deliberate political intent because they were concerned that Gary Griffith was affecting the criminal enterprise of those persons aligned to politicians.
Let's take another call. Hello, good morning. Hello, good morning.
Good morning, Satish. And good morning to your honored guest, Mr. Gary Griffith, Princess Tong.
Good morning.
Mr. Griffith, I want to ask the question. Who gave Jolene John the authority, the mandate, the moral authority, or otherwise, to adjudicate on national unity in Trinidad and Tobago? In my opinion, she has contradicted the very foundation, the philosophy of the party that Mr. Fanley built when thousands of us gathered in Aranguez Savannah. Unity was, the UNC was built after the African National Congress and the Indian Congress in India. Unity, bringing people, organizations, interests, stakeholders, every possible interest to bring together under the umbrella of the United National Congress. That was the founding principle and philosophy of the United National Congress. And I am saying today, without fear of contradiction, there could be no victory without Michaela Pandey and Gary Griffiths. Believe it or not. Thank you, Princess Song.
Oh, Saturday, if I could just quickly add it. This concern with Gary Griffiths, Michaela Pandey, whatever, this has gone on worldwide for hundreds of years. When there's a leader, whether it is a king, a queen, a prime minister, a president, and you have somebody who's a deputy prime minister, who's a general, somebody who's there as your right hand, and the person is performing, eventually the leader starts being worried that that person is going to take their kingdom, going to take their country. And we've always seen that. And that's why sometimes you see knights and lieutenants and generals and deputy prime ministers being totally removed because you're concerned that this person is becoming too popular. That is weakness of a leader. If I am a leader, my leadership has always been, I want the best people around me. I would like to be the dumbest person in the room if I have to deal with an issue of health, education, national security. I want experts around me. I bring the experts. But sometimes we have leaders who want the dumbest persons around them, and all they want is yes people, so that I could walk naked downtown and people say, yes, PM, you're looking good, or yes, political leader, you're looking good. That is weakness. It doesn't build a unit. It doesn't build a political party. It doesn't build a country. 31 of the 47 U.S. presidents had military service. None of them were geologists. I think none were attorneys. There's a reason for that. We analyze, we strategize, and we look to build a team and unite people. So it's not just about fighting wars. And sometimes we have political leaders who may be intimidated by the fact that this person is too popular, too successful, he might take my work. You must be confident in yourself to know that nobody has an interest to try to overthrow you. But if it is you think that way, you will sideline the people who can be of value to you and those who you serve, and the end result is defeat.
Yeah, you know, this is a real... I spoke to someone who sat in a regional corporation very high up, and the individual said that very same thing to me. Said that they can't do all the projects they want to do in their... This is a real conversation I had. Eh? The man said, listen to me, I can't do all the things I want to do in my corporation. No, the chairman will get vexed.
Yeah.
And the chairman will say, I'm trying to show him up on this. Somebody actually said that to me.
It happens. It happened to me as Minister of National Security. I became the blue-eyed boy of the cabinet, and I started being attacked by other ministers who started getting paid social media hitmen to be attacking me because they thought that Gary Griffiths was becoming too popular. It happens. It happens all over. Not just UNC I'm speaking about. This has been PNM. It has happened in the COP right now. It's happened with the police service, where there was a deputy, a very senior police officer. He tried to undermine me and lied and sent false information to the politicians because he wanted the job. That is what happens. That is how it works.
Yeah. We're almost out of time. A couple messages to take us up to the top. But as we wrap up our discussion here, let's get an update on what's going on with these discussions between the NTA and Prakash Ramadan, not only Congress of the People and hope and so on. What's taking place?
Well, so let me just say quickly again, that is my style. My style, whereas other political parties and leaders try to divide a country, my job is to unite a country. Next year, after general election, listen, reducing crime and bringing this country back to a degree of stability, that is easy for me. I give you the assurance that will happen. And the same principles that I used, that we used to reduce crime, we will do it to improve health, education, the economy, sport, national security, everything. So that is easy. The hard part is uniting the country. That has been a problem because the politicians have deliberately divided it. So my first step is to unite other political parties with similar visions, ideologies, principles. And that's what we're doing through our MOU. I thought it was rather disappointing when Prakash Ramadan said that the COP is not, they are not committed when it was signed. And he knew that. So yes, we have signed that. And this is not about the Faizabad Accord. Just put a cosmetic thing with people, write a signature and say we're not going to compete in the same constituencies. This must be something that is binding. There's a proper foundation. And if the UNC hopefully may become interested, it will ensure that there will not be instability that took place in 2010 to 2015. That is how I work. That is my style. Making sure there's a proper foundation that when we get into a relationship. It is not going to be a marriage of convenience that ends in divorce or political domestic violence, but one that is going to be united, stable, and ensure that this is going to be the best government this country has ever seen.
Yeah, that's why we're going to have to leave it here this morning, but I know that our conversations are far from over because the political landscape is only just heating up, and we know that there's a lot more to come. All of these developments, politically and otherwise, will continue to dominate our discussions. I want to thank you for being with us here this morning. As always, season's greetings to you and to everybody else. And
the best insight, instant feedback, accountability, the all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.